Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to be talking to some legends of the sport. I'm really proud to have these guys on the show today. I've been working on this interview for probably a month or so. We've got Boyer Coe, who no introduction necessary, of course, was one of the greatest bodybuilders of the 1970s. Boyer is a four-time Mr. Universe winner, and he was one of the most successful pros in the IFBB, competed very successfully in the Mr. Olympia for many years in the 1970s. Can't think of his highest placing, probably third, I think, in 1979. But Boyer also went on to win many pro shows himself. And we also are joined by Roy Callender. And Roy was also another great, iconic bodybuilder of the golden age of bodybuilding from the 1960s, 1970s, all the way into the early 1980s. And Roy was also a Mr. Universe winner. He won the IFBB Mr. Universe in 1977. And then he went on to have a very successful pro career himself. And he took fourth place in the 1981 Mr. Olympia, which was one of the most controversial ever. So we've got two great bodybuilders from the 1970s joining us today on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And they're going to be together on the show. And they haven't seen each other in a long time. And Boyer and Roy met at the 1969 NABBA Mr. Universe that Boyer won. And Roy took second to Boyer in his class. He beat out Albert Beckles that year. So going to have a really, really enjoyable show. You guys are going to love this. All right, before we get to that, I do want to read our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Our certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And they do have offices all over the United States now. They're opening up offices all over. And they will work with anyone who's in the continental United States. You do not have to live in Florida. And if you mention you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your first order. All right. We've got a lot of emails to read from our show last week with Barbara Outwind, who was Arnold's girlfriend when Arnold moved to the United States. And it was a very, very popular show. I got a lot of really good feedback. And I put it up on YouTube this week, and it got over 4,000 views already. And it's only been up for a couple of days, which is a lot for my channel. So people really love that interview. Thank you to all you who wrote about that. I want to read some of these emails we got. If you guys want to email me directly, you can just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. This one was from Joe Hoffman. He says, "Hey, John, I just watched your interview with Barbara Outland. Great job. I may have already told you this before, but you are a great interviewer. You ask the right questions and you let your subject speak. And in this age of political gotcha questions, you don't interrogate your subjects. You just have a conversation with them. Very refreshing. Lastly, I'm loving your look back at the various Mr. Olympia, Mr. Universe contests on your bodybuilding history on your YouTube channel. Very informative, interesting, and entertaining. Keep up the wonderful work, Joe Hoffman." All right. Thank you very much, Joe. Thanks for those compliments. And I'm glad you're enjoying those bodybuilding history. I'm going to try and get a couple more up this week. I didn't get up any last week because I've been kind of busy, but I'm going to try and do, let's see, what are we up to? The 1968 Olympia, which would be Sergio's second win, where he actually went in unopposed. There was no competition. And then I'll cover the America, the Mr. America and the World, Mr. World contest with that were held on the same night. And then I'm going to do the 1967 NABBA Universe, which, of course, was Arnold's first win at 20 years old, and Bill Pearl won the pro show. So those will be the next two coming up, hopefully this week. I got another email here from Scott Barron, who is one of our Patreon donors and a real friend of the show. So appreciate hearing from Scott. Scott says, John, once again, I really enjoyed your interview with Barbara Outland, and I'm so pleased that she was willing to make an historical contribution to your show. I apologize in advance that my current schedule doesn't allow me the luxury of having as much time as I would like to include specific stats backed up with reliable sources. The issue of the scandal not having much of an impact on Arnold, other than the huge impact of ending his marriage, of course, needs to be gently challenged. As you already know, I'm a huge fan of Arnold's, and I was so fortunate to have spent 2 days with him during the height of his fame in the early 1990s. Yeah, Scott was the winner at one of the Arnold Classics. They used to have a drawing where they would pick from the VIP tickets and read the ticket on stage. And whoever got picked would get to spend a couple of days with Arnold. And he got to work out with him at World's Gym. And he actually got to go on the movie set with Arnold. And that was when Arnold was making Last Action Hero in, I think, 1992. Scott says, to reiterate, I really enjoyed the interview. I really like Barbara Outland, and I'm still in awe of Arnold's amazing career and accomplishments. When Arnold returned to his acting career after his governorship, I personally feel that each of his movies had awesome moments in them, yet they failed to capture the magic. I want to focus only on the movies where Arnold starred and forgetting The Expendables, and also leaving out the Terminator franchise. I really enjoyed The Last Stand, and I found his other later movies entertaining. However, the box office reception to most of those productions was extremely, extremely lackluster, to say the least. The reception of Arnold's book, Total Recall, which I read twice and thoroughly enjoyed, had extremely disappointing sales. When Arnold appeared on NBC's Celebrity Apprentice, the ratings dropped. In all fairness, that could have been possibly due to Trump having producer credits to that show, and perhaps viewers were saying no to Trump and not so much saying no to Arnold. It's difficult to quantify, if not impossible. Could the extremely lackluster box office earnings, disappointing book sales, and subpar television ratings simply be because Arnold, like all of us, has gotten older and we like to remember him during his heyday? Perhaps. However, although it's impossible to quantify with precision, there's no doubt in my mind that the scandal had a tremendous negative impact upon Arnold's projects. I'm in awe of Arnold's amazing life and accomplishments. However, Arnold founded the University of Southern California's Schwarzenegger Institute for State and Global Policy for people to think critically and challenge issues, etc. I thoroughly enjoyed Barbara's interview, and I found it thought-provoking. Yeah, Scott's pretty right on there with the Arnold's movie career. It was a huge disappointment compared to how big of a star he was before after he left the governorship. So maybe Scott's got something there. This email says, John, bodybuilding was my life from 14 to 30 years old. I started to compete in 1984. My first competition was the Teenage South District, Ohio, where I won the 16 to 17 year old class, and Dave Lieberman won the 18 to 19 class and overall. I was 16 and I continued competing until I was 30 in the local tri-state Ohio area. I feel like I was in the sport during its best years. After I turned 30, I found the opportunity to start competing in the strongman world thanks to Gary Udit for promoting the Pittsburgh Strongman Championship. I then got hooked on the strongman sport, and I'm still very active with promoting and helping to design equipment. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you and the time you take to bring back the good old days. I've really enjoyed your podcast and all your awesome guests. Thanks to all of you for sharing your experiences with the sport you helped to create that made such a huge difference in my life. Very much looking forward to hearing more. God bless, Steve Slater. All right. Thank you, Steve. And then on my Facebook page, I also got a couple comments about the Barbara Outland interview. Gary Colvin said, Arnold and Me was an amazing book. My wife just read it too. We'll be tuning in. Brad Allen said, I'll have to grab a copy of this book, but I can't wait to hear this one. Good get, John. You just keep coming up with great content. Lydia Tack, who was married to Zabel Kwaszewski, and Lydia is a friend of Barbara Outland. And actually, Barbara tried to get Lydia to come on the show to talk about all her experiences, because Lydia was not only married to Zabel, but she actually modeled for Weider doing a photo shoot with Arnold. And Lydia looked really hot back in the day in her bikini. But anyways, Lydia said she does not want to come on the show. She doesn't want to talk about the past, I guess, or she just doesn't want to do an interview. So anyways, Lydia said, I'm looking forward to hearing it, John. Thanks for the heads up. Her book is a heartfelt must-read for all bodybuilders and Arnold fans. She told me how much she enjoyed your interview with her. Walter van de Breden, we had on the show before, said, I met Barbara in Belgium together with Arnold. I have her book too. And then Barbara herself chimed in and she said, thank you for researching to find me and for your friendly, prepared interview. I enjoyed our session all over again. So thank you, Barbara. Richard Baldwin said, another great job, John. George Betancourt said, this was great. And Alex Ardente said, great podcast, John. So, all right. Thank you for all the comments. And thanks again to Barbara for coming on the show. People really loved that interview. So that was really great. I want to wish my dad a happy birthday. Yesterday was his 83rd birthday. So thank God he's still healthy and happy. And him and my mom celebrated all weekend. I think they went out to dinner with my brother on Friday, and they're having lunch at the house with my sister and her family today. So unfortunately, I don't get to see my parents much this year because of this damn coronavirus. But I did get to see them earlier in the year when I went to Hawaii, and I spent a week out there, and they were out there celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. They got married in 1960, and then they also came to Florida to see me in, I think, February. So that was good timing because that was before all this stuff hit in March. We had some bad news in the entertainment world. I don't know if you guys saw this. Chadwick Boseman, who played the Black Panther, great, talented young actor, died at only, I think, 43 years old of colon cancer, which I didn't even know he had. And I guess a lot of people didn't know he had. He had that for 4 years. And I guess he was just keeping it kind of a secret. And he was battling it, you know, going to chemo and everything. And Chadwick was married. He had a family. And man, that was a huge loss. Died at 43 years old. He was a great actor. He starred in a lot of movies just over the last 4 or 5 years. And of course, The Black Panther was one of the biggest movies of all time. And I know they were really looking forward to doing a sequel to that. So, wow, what a tragic loss that was. I had my hernia surgery scheduled for this week, and they canceled that because I had to get a CT scan earlier in the month so they could find out the location of the hernia. And they found out I have 2 lesions on my liver. So I don't know what that means. So now I have to go for an MRI, and they're going to have to look at that. And from what I've talked to Jerry Branum, and I also talked to Dave Palumbo, and they both said that usually those lesions are benign. So they shouldn't be too dangerous. I don't know why I have them, but they're going to look at them first before they do any kind of surgery. So I don't know when I'm going to get the hernia surgery. It's probably going to be delayed for a while. But I was kind of bummed out at first because I was all ready to have the surgery and I was going to take 6 weeks off from the gym and I had stuff planned. Plus, I took all these days off of work after I had the surgery because I was going to take 2 weeks off of work. So now everything's up in the air. I got to do everything all over again, but better safe than sorry. So we're going to check out these lesions and see what needs to be done from there. Today was the day of Franco's passing 1 year ago, August 30th. This was the day that Franco passed away in Italy when he had that heart attack. So I can't believe it's been a year already. It doesn't seem like a full year. So rest in peace, Franco. And we did talk about Franco a little bit on our interview coming up with Boyer Coe and Roy Callender, as well as some other legends who passed away recently, like Ed Corney. And we also talked a little bit about Chris Dickerson because he's going through some hard times too. And last week was Chris's birthday. I actually sent him a birthday card at that nursing home that he's in. Hopefully he'll get that and it'll make him feel a little bit better. And I also talked to Boyer about Bill Pearl. He said Bill's still doing good. I guess he's got Parkinson's and Bill will be 90 this year on October 31st. So hopefully I can do an interview with Bill again. That would be wonderful if you could get him on the show. So I'm going to still keep working on that and try that out. All right, so that's all I got. So here is our interview with Boyer Coe and Roy Callender together again. They met at the 1969 Navamister Universe, and we got them both on the show at the same time, so you guys are really going to love this. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I have two real legends here with us today. I have Mr. Boyer Coe, who's been with us before, and I also have Roy Callender. So we got two great stars from the 60s and 70s. Welcome to the show, guys.
Good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Took a while for us to do this, but we finally got together. So, Boyer, you told me that you and Roy first met back at the Navamister Universe, right? The one that you won back in 1969. That's when you guys first met.
I can't remember exactly the last time I saw Roy, but I certainly remember the first time I saw Roy. And that was at the NABBA Universe in London, 1969. Dr. Heinenstein had me lined up right between Albert Beckles and Roy Kalner. That was the first time I had the pleasure of meeting both of them.
Wow. You remember that, Roy? The first time you met Blair?
That was good. First time I've ever seen anybody in that shape. England, the first time we had ever seen anybody in that shape.
Really?
Albert Beckles turned to me with the Americans.
I don't know if Roy remembers this, but when I got over there, 2 days prior to that, I was working out in the gym, and the guy spotted me, put some rosin on his hands, and it got in my eye. So by the time I got to London, my eye was completely swollen shut. So I had to go to the hospital in London, and the guy cleaned my eye up and put a patch over my eye. So the night before the contest, I'm walking around, and that was the first time I'd ever been overseas. Everybody thought, hey, there's the new Mr. America. He's only got one eye. So luckily, the morning before the show, I took the mask off. I said, there's no way in hell I'm going on stage with this eye patch over my eye.
Wow.
I can't remember seeing a problem. I always had the physique, man. You saw this guy, perfectly built man, shit. We didn't see that in England. And that was my first time seeing Boyer. Boyer took the big class. All guys.
Yeah.
Albert edged me out in my medium class. That time it was medium classes. And I think Boyer took the overall too.
Roy, I think you beat Albert that night, didn't you? I think that was one of the ones.
Albert and Roy and I were in the medium class.
Right.
John Haislip. Remember Jim Haislip? He was the one that won the tall class.
Right.
Okay. Because you see, the year before, Dennis Tenorino had come back and beat Jim Haislip. Now, prior to that, every contest I ever entered where Haislip was there, damn it, he would win. I would come out second. This happened for the entire year. No matter where I went, he'd show up. I was always second.
Yeah.
I'd win the most muscular or maybe a body part or two, but he'd always win. Jim had a very broad all-American appeal. He was like the coming of Steve Reeves again. Nice looking guy. So I'll always remember, I seen the morning of the contest, the NABBA contest. I said, Jim, this time I'm going to beat you. For whatever reason, I could see he lost confidence. I don't know why. But after the show, and I was fortunate enough to win, we went out, we celebrated, we flew back to the United States together, but he never competed again. I always wondered, he had such great potential. He could have went on and done, really had a career in bodybuilding, but he never did.
Yeah.
Really a nice guy.
Didn't he tell you on the plane too, Boyer? Didn't he say that he was done? Didn't he say that was it for him?
Well, I think he told other people he was finished. He just had enough. He liked to hunt and fish a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe he was just tired of all the time required to train for bodybuilding.
Yeah.
But he could, had he been more aggressive, I'm sure he could have done even extremely well if he would have got even into the movies.
Oh, really? Wow.
Well, yeah, he was a nice-looking guy. He was everything that Mr. America should have looked like, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah, that movie.
Hey, Roy, you were living in England then, but you competed in the NABBA Universe a few times, right? You did it back in 67, 68, I think, right?
Yeah, that's where I got my start, through Rick Wayne.
Okay.
And I came up through the ranks in England so fast that it would blow my own mind. I thought it was just a fat kid who looked good on the metro.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar Heidenstam and Rick Wayne said, no, you should compete in the Mr. London. I said, not Rick. So I did. And then they said, this qualified you to compete in this universe at the Royal Albert Hall. I said, okay, I'll go. And when I turned up, they didn't even know exactly what to do. I just walked around with the guys. my eyes popping out of my head, and I felt like warrior and just face locked. I saw those people, like, okay. So I went in, came, when I, first of all, when I competed there, I was just a kid. I'm the first or second. I'm happy to be there. Mm-hmm. All these big names. I saw Barry's name in a magazine, and I'm seeing him there and say, oh yeah, I'm happy. I don't care if I come. Ninth. I did come 3 seconds. I don't remember. And, second to Barry, I can't remember exactly which. And I didn't sleep for about a week, man. I carried.
For a week?
I was a guard on the train, or I was a train guard at the time. And I used to accidentally bring my trophy to work. Just to have it with me. It was that gave me my start. When I saw people like Boyer, I said, okay, I can take this seriously. Because Rick Lansing came to me and said, you see, you came second. Now, what is going to stop you from winning? You have to get serious, Callender.
Yeah.
For the following year, is that when Rick Wayne brought me over to America? I saw America for the first time. And he brought me over to the Mr. World in New York.
Okay.
I saw real eye poppers.
Both of you guys pretty much stuck with NABBA in the beginning, right? Before you went over. Well, Roy, you did the IFBB Universe in 68, though, right? The one in Miami Beach.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Because yeah. Rick Wayne has started the IFBB in London.
Okay.
He held two competitions, a qualifier, Mr. United Kingdom, which I won, and himself and the guy in Germany, they brought me over to Mr. Europe they were having in Munich.
Okay.
I won. But that's where it started for me in the IFBB. I never went back.
Okay.
I competed in another competition. Yes, I did. I'm a liar. I competed in another competition in 1971, I think it was. And they banned me from the IFBB, so I couldn't compete. Myself and Franco, we were banned. They couldn't compete in the Mr. Universe in France.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you did the NABBA Universe, it was at 71, and you couldn't go over to France and compete there.
Right. But I was disappointed when they said to me, listen, you're banned because I competed in NABBA last week. Okay. God rest his soul. He said, I hate that NABBA. You can't. Okay. All right. I made a mistake, man. And it wasn't only my, I think they suspended Sergio as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They banned Sergio, right? He couldn't compete against Arnold at the 71 Olympia, right? I remember that. Yeah. So, Boyer, you waited a while, right, before you went over to the IFBB. You didn't compete until, I think, 76, right?
Let's see. Yeah, 76, that's right. That was 70. Yeah, I continued to compete in the NABBA. I would normally what I would do would compete usually 2 weeks prior to that. Dan Lurie always held a Mr. World contest.
Okay.
And I would use that as a warm-up, and I would compete there, and then I loved going over to London. And that's one of the things that I wanted to ask Roy, because I know he competed in the IFBB as well. But even though in the NABBA Universe, you know, there was no money involved, but there was such a legacy of that particular contest. You know, that was a contest that John Grimmick had won, that Steve Reeves had won, that Reg Park had won, that Bill Pearl had won, the history. I remember when I won that contest, that was the one I value the most of all the contests that I competed in, because there was such a tradition to that show. Now, it's faded, you know, it's faded in importance, but that was a wonderful memory to me. I'll always remember that particular contest. And I wanted to ask Roy how he felt about that, because even though there was no money involved, when you went to England, you were so appreciated by the fans and everybody. They truly loved bodybuilding. And it just gave you such a good feeling when you were successful there.
Yeah.
I didn't feel the same way, because, man, I'm a googly eye kid from the Caribbean. And Rick Wayne's argument is always, listen, well, you have to buy food, you have to pay rent, you have to do this, you have to do that. Nothing. Into the IFBB, you're going to win something, you're going to turn professional, and you're going to make a living out of it. they couldn't see it. We're talking about 1960s, man, early 70s. I couldn't see that. And but for instance, when you go and get schools now, they play, you know, they give you £5. You have to travel to Lincolnshire to get to come every £5. What are you going to do with that? And Rick Wayne's argument was, this sport is going to become a sport at which you're going to make a living. But, however, I went to New York, they sent me, they told me something that I had not seen in my life. I had never had someone come to my door, give me a plane ticket, pick me up, take me to the airport, make sure I had everything. When I got to the airport in New York, they picked me up, took me to the best hotel I'd seen to that point in my life. In my life. And I suppose, I said, we should be like other pro athletes. I like this. I'm going to stay with this. So I played second to John Grimmick. Not John Grimmick, the strong guy. And I played second to Chuck Sipes. And that Joe came to me and said, Roy, we like your body. I said, I work on the train service. I don't want to lose my job. He said, you leave that. I will figure that out for you. Here's some money. Here's your plane tickets. And one is going to come and take you to Miami. He said, who? Arnold will be there. I said, what do you do? Okay, then I'll see you when you get there. Okay, look at me. So I went over to Florida. The airport took me to a hotel called the DuPont Plaza. I'd never forget, not DuPont Plaza. Yeah, DuPont Plaza. And Arnold came over and Arnold said, Roy, I'm so glad you're here. You made the big jump, eh? I said, big jump. It's like it here. So we competed. That's the first time that Zane had ever beaten Arnold.
Right.
And Arnold and I shared the same and, for about a week, just over a week. And I remember after Zane won, myself and Arnold, I knew Arnold from London.
Right. At the Napa Universe.
Great friends. And in London, because I spoke English too and a little bit of German. So he laid on his bed, man, and he said, your next single bed over there, I'm over here. He said, pox, you fucking judges. I said, Arnold, come on, man, it's over. He got you. It's the first time he met you, man. It's okay. He was browner than you. You were kind of white. You were big. But he had something that you didn't have. I don't know what it is. But leave it alone, man. So he said, so, thinking he's sleeping now. Then all of a sudden he says, I'm going to be big in this America. Big in this fucking America. And I said, yeah, whatever, man. Let's go to sleep. But that's a true story.
Yeah, I remember you told that before, yeah.
And never forget it.
Roy, how did you feel about like competing in the Napa Universe compared to the IFBB back then? Because the IFBB was kind of new, right? It was in the 60s. It wasn't as professional as it would become later on.
We were launching it then. And that is why I said to you, I was bowled over by someone putting cash in my hand. I paid for a plane ticket in my hand. They wanted to pick me up at the airport, and they were there. I was bowled over by it. They said, this is what bodybuilding should be.
Okay. So Joe Leader then paid your way.
It was cheap and later on, but I suppose he wanted to get me in Miami so that they would have a better different.
Okay, all right. Hey Boyer, why did you wait a while to go to the IFBB? Did you not trust the leaders? Because I know like Bill Pearl, he was like sort of he never went over to the IFBB, right?
That's correct. No, the thing is this, you have to remember certainly what part of the country he lived in. I always lived in the South, so everything, the contest there was nothing but AAU contests.
Right.
There were no IFBB contests there. So I had no experience. It's not that I didn't trust the leaders. I always had a good relationship with Joe and Ben after I went to the IFBB. I tell you how I ended up going to the first 1976 Mr. Olympia. I didn't really have any intentions of going. And that was the first year that Jim Lorimer and Arnold produced the Mr. Olympia in Columbus. And Arnold called me on the phone and asked me if I would compete in the Mr. Olympia. So I said, okay, sure, I'll do it, because I'd been going over to London each year, and I said, this would be a new challenge. So I remember in 76, when I got to Columbus, the big deal was Ben Weider says, you don't belong to the IFBB. You can't compete in the Mr. Olympia. I said, well, look, I'm here. Said Arnold invited me. And then I do remember Arnold going to bat for him and talking to Ben. He said, look, I invited him here to this show. And it's, so then that was okay. Then I was in good graces with Ben. Ben liked me after that. So after that, he invited me to, I think, the IFBB Mr. Universe was held in Montreal. And then he invited me, he wanted me to do a guest posing spot there. And right. Then so that was the start of my relationship with the Weiders.
Okay.
That was your relationship with me, Warrior, because when I saw you guest pose at the 1976, I was living in Montreal, when I saw you guest pose at the 1976 Mr. Universe, I said, shit, I remember Warrior, he was a nice guy. I'm going to come back. That is when some guys over here were competing, guys from Canada were competing, and I was having them warm up backstage, and they were talking about, I hope I come sixth, or I hope I get a top 10. And I was so pissed, excuse my language. I said, you guys are from Canada, man. Right? In Montreal. We just had the Olympics. What are you talking about? It's your country. It's your best chance. Is all you want from Canada? And that very moment, I made my intention to come back. That is the moment that they come back. And the very next year, I won the Mr. Canada, went to France, won the Mr. Universe, and then I met up with Dory again.
Yeah. How long were you off, right? Because you were competing in the late 60s, early 70s, right? And then you got into wrestling. And then how many years were you off before you
71.
71, okay. Yeah. So from 71 to 77, that was your layoff. Okay, yeah. Well, when you came back really strong because you looked great. You did, like you said, you won the Universe that year in 77, and then you won, I think, also the Mr. International, right? The heavyweight class of Mr. International.
Yeah, the heavyweight class. I won the consecutively. Then my name started, and I just stuck with it.
Right.
Money came because of guest posing appearances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I could take it back.
Yeah, Boyer, the sport had really changed, right, by the late 1970s, because now, you know, like Arnold and Lorimer were promoting the Olympia, and they were doing a really good job with it, and then started getting TV coverage. And then eventually, like, Wayne D'Amelio got into it, and then they started being a professional circuit and everything. So it was now you could make money at it. Like before, where you said with the Napa Universe, you couldn't make anything, right?
Well, I guess that's how naive I was. I was never interested in making any money. You know, I just did it for the love of the sport.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do. But, see, I had met Jim Lorimer years before Arnold ever met Jim Lorimer. See, okay. In 1967... when Dennis Tenorino won the Mr. America, it was held in Columbus. And that was, there was only like 12 or 13 guys in the Mr. America. Wow. It was the lowest number of people that were in the contest. But it was, the show was extremely well run. Jim Lorimer did a fantastic job of organizing. So then I didn't meet Jim again until 1970. When he held the Mr. World contest and the World Weightlifting Championships.
Right.
Now, that is a story in itself, because in 1970, Arnold, Franco, Dave Draper, and I competed in the NABBA Universe. This was on a Saturday night. Okay, we get up, Sunday morning we leave, we fly back from London to New York, okay? I don't vaguely remember, but I don't think we ever went through customs, immigrations, or anything, because they had a private jet waiting for us. When we stepped off the plane in New York, Jim had a pilot pick us up and flew us to Columbus. We competed in the Mr. World contest. That was the first time that Arnold managed to beat Sergio. And I'll always remember that after the contest, all night long, in Weapon Room, he says, "I can't believe I beat Sergio. Can you believe I managed to beat Sergio?"
Wow.
And that was when he started his legacy with the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, wow. So you recognized in Jim Lorimer, this guy's a great promoter and everything.
He was by far. And even before, you know, when he first started holding the Mr. Olympia, it was so well organized. You get to Columbus, I mean, everything was done for you. You didn't have to find a way. They had somebody picking you up. It was either they picked us all up in a large bus, you know, or they had people to take you around. You were never at a loss for anything. I can't tell you a funny story about the 1970 World Weightlifting Championships. You remember this guy, Alexis? He was the first guy, I believe, to clean and jerk. Maybe it was 500 pounds or something. Yeah. The big Russian guy. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is what happened. I didn't see this, but I was told this. He didn't speak any English at all. So they were having a female interpreter take him from the hotel, which is a few blocks away, to the site of the contest. So at a given time, he was supposed to be out in front of the hotel. So he was there right on time. Well, it just so happens a lady is driving down the street and she waves at somebody on the street and she thinks he's waving at her. So he runs over and jumps in the car. Here's a guy well over 400 pounds, speaks no English, and this lady sees this guy jumping in her car. She jumps out of the car and just runs down the street screaming. Okay, now you have the cops there. And this guy doesn't speak any English. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. Finally, the interpreter shows up and explains what's going on. So then the guy, they managed to get him over to the contest site. But the guy must have been going crazy because the cops were just about ready to haul him off to jail.
He was a crazy looking guy too, the big hair.
He was massive. He had an enormous. Well, he was just an enormous body. Period.
Right. I remember he had that big stomach.
Oh yeah, he had like a big barrel stomach. You know.
Right.
But he was strong. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then he broke the record that night, right?
Oh yeah, he did. I don't remember what the record was so long ago, but he was the first guy that I think to clean and jerk over 500 pounds.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Roy, what did you think of the Mr. Olympia the first time you went in it in 1978?
Before I go over to Sam, we share something in common, Barry and I, because I shared the same house with Vasily Alexiev. I shared Yusuf Bilkos' house with him. He stayed, we were staying at Yusuf Bilkos at the same time. I've never seen anybody eat three and four chickens at one sitting. And that is no lie. They're no longer with us, but that is something that I share with Warrior. We both met Vasily. I never forget that. He was so kind, man. So gentle. What was your question again? I didn't know Warrior and I had so many connections, but
so that's one of the. You stayed at Albert Busick's house with Vasily Alexiev? Was that what you're saying?
Wilkosh.
Oh, Wilkosh. Okay. Wilkosh. Okay. Cool. I was asking about the Olympia in 78, like the first time you went in. What did you think of that? What was your experience in that?
Man, I walked around that thing gawking at everybody, okay? I saw that I read about Poirier. I just gawked. I was amazed. I was so that sort of company.
Yeah.
Like I said, coming from Canada, I said, okay, I'm here. I hope I do well. It would be good for the bodybuilding in Canada. And we competed. I went back to the hotel. I said, well, I'll get about eighth, ninth. And when they announced that, when they gave the results, I heard fourth. I said, can't be up there. And then they announced me third.
Yeah.
I nowadays guys would cry in the open. I just cried, man. Silently. I didn't let them see the tears.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I think it was unmanly. I was so and then like Boyer Cole that I admired so much. I said, why the hell would they place me ahead of him? But that one night in my bodybuilding career that I'd never, ever forget.
That first Olympia, yeah.
I read about in magazine that I had heard that I'd like to be like him. I like Boyer's arms. I wanted those, period. Mm-hmm. And we'd get in the gym and pretend this is what we're doing. So when I saw people like that, I just straight, just got into a corner because Boyer to me was up there. I looked up and was like, he doesn't know it. He didn't know. He just, all I knew that he saw him in the magazines, I treasured the magazines, and I admired his physique, period.
Yeah.
My bodybuilding career was made that night, man. I said, whatever happens now, if I don't compete anymore, this is good. But as you know, I've been practicing.
Right. Hey, Boyer, were you getting a lot of more guest postings and stuff around then or in the late 1970s because the sport had really grown a lot more?
Well, my attitude was you really got to work at it. So, yes. I mean, that's the thing. I would do exhibitions, and the thing I liked to do the most was seminars. I did a lot of seminars as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Because that, over a period of time, you accumulate knowledge. And I was always interested in, letting people know what I had learned. Because back in my day, everything was trial and error. Yeah. You had no really blueprint as to you had to trial and error do something. Sometimes things worked, sometimes they didn't. So I did try to take advantage of that. I did as many exhibitions and as many seminars as I could possibly do.
Yeah, it's weird now with social media and stuff. That's the one thing that's gone away is the seminars. Like, nobody does seminars anymore because I guess everybody feels like they can get all the information off of YouTube or whatever.
Well, that's very true. But the sad thing about the internet that just was the magazines.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you're. I loved when I first started bodybuilding. Listen, I studied those bodybuilding magazines so much because just like every young kid, I believe. There was a secret. There was a secret to bodybuilding. And then if you could just find that secret, man, I would study. Always greatly admired Bill Pearl. Still do. And I figured, man, he must have a secret. So, and the magazine I loved the most was Iron Man, when Perry Rader owned Iron Man.
Yeah.
It only came out once every 2 months. But, man, you studied that magazine, And then the internet just killed all the magazines.
I know.
Because I remember, like, I say, you're anxious to find out who won the Mr. America. Well, the Mr. America contest would be over 3 months before you'd ever show up the results in the magazine.
Right,
now it's
right.
Instantaneously. It's totally different.
It's totally different, yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess that's what made the magic of it, with bodybuilding, was the magazines. And
exactly, because it's hard, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to Jerry Branham, and he was talking. He went to the first Mr. Olympia, the Larry Scott one, and he said the noise level in that place was crazy, but it was because, on the East Coast in New York, they never saw the bodybuilders from California like Larry Scott and Dave Draper. So when these guys showed up on stage, it was like seeing a movie star, and the place just went crazy. He said the noise level, he said, was like for, I think, 15 or 20 minutes they were screaming for Larry Scott. I mean, you would never see that today,
Well, and I recall, not so much at the Mr. Olympia, but I recall, and I'll always give him credit for that, he was largely responsible for professional bodybuilding, and that was Wayne D'Amelio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when he held the Night of Champions, and I'm sure Roy will remember that too, I mean, the people would just go crazy. And that was at the old Beacon Theater.
Yeah, New York.
There was a certain amount of electricity at that particular theater that you just didn't find anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, Roy, you were in that show too, right? The very first Night of the Champions, the 1978. Both of you guys were in that.
Yeah, that's another thing we shared. Roy's memory of that, his memory is so clear. He said exactly what I would say. I didn't know when the that's an important part. But professional bodybuilder, that's the first time, again, I was treated so royally. Now, this guy, even at that time, paid me to turn up. And then you got prize money on top. Professional bodybuilding thing, he put it on a different path in the media. I hope he's still around because I have a really strat of him. But he made people want to be professional bodybuilders.
Yeah. Well, Wayne started the whole circuit, right? You guys had the Grand Prix circuit, which that never existed before for professional bodybuilding. He really, like Boyer said, he started the whole professional bodybuilding thing.
Yeah, but it grew out of the first Night of the Champions.
Right, right.
Then you could make a living. This is what I said to you from day one. When Rick can make a living in this. And when I hear Boyer Cole saying, when I heard Boyer just now saying, did a lot of seminars. I went paid for those seminars. And people sought knowledge from those who had accomplished. Now today, on the internet, I'm not carrying the internet down the street. Now, everybody who never trained, the guy who's on death row in prison, all get on the internet and profess to be professionals and answer questions and they know more. This is it. This is why we consider that I was so lucky. I was so lucky to be in that time because it was based on knowledge. We didn't fight against each other. Everybody helped each other. It was a different thing, man. You can't compare bodybuilding today with what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody came on stage with a bubble gut. Nobody dropped dead. It's a different thing. It was a sport that people loved. Women loved it. You can't say that women love bodybuilding today. You can't say that. They loved it. I remember if there was a magazine at the supermarket checkout and it had a bodybuilder on it, it disappeared.
What about the audiences back then? Do you think the audiences were better too? Were they more enthusiastic?
Yes, because they were seeing guys who had really worked their asses off to get to that point. And guys who were willing to chat with you after, and guys who were willing to tell you what they were doing, how they think.
Hey Roy, me and Boyer were talking about Mike Menzer because we were just reminiscing before you joined us that he's been gone now. He passed away 19 years ago. What memories do you have of Mike Menzer? Did you know him pretty well when you were competing?
Not very well. I met him in France when I won the World Championships, and that is when Scalak had beaten him.
Yeah.
I was in Mike's corner in the competition. And I don't know. I said, Mike, I think you got this thing, man. And, do you think so? I said, yeah. We stood there backstage. And he said, I don't think so. I said, we'll see. I don't see anybody here better than you. I think everybody know what happened in that one.
Yeah, that was controversial.
I had nothing against Cal's physique, but on that night.
Right.
Speaking from a bodybuilder standpoint, I had no axe to grind.
Boyer, how good you knew Mike really well, right? When you guys were competing together and stuff, you formed a friendship with him, right?
Roy reminded me of something. The first time I actually met Mike was over in France.
Oh, the same place.
We were there to give an exhibition at the Mr. Universe contest, and that's when I became friends with Mike and Danny Padilla. That was the first time I met Danny as well.
Oh, okay.
And I'm in complete agreement with Roy. I thought Mike was superior to Cal Skellig. That was a surprise when they announced Cal victorious in the contest.
Yeah.
Cal was good. He had an excellent upper body, but he was a little bit weak in the legs.
Yeah.
So Mike had a much more symmetrical body.
Well, speaking of Cal, he was also in the 78 Olympia with you both of you guys. And yeah. I think, Boyer, you got fourth that year, and Roy got third, and Cal was fifth. And that's when Cal did the famous controversial Jesus pose. Like he got
And he never should have done that. I mean, I didn't understand that. He trained at the same gym I did. Dan Howard had Dan Howard's World Gym in Fountain Valley, California.
Right.
And for whatever reason, going into the contest, because I would see him training, he was convinced he was going to win. I never said anything, but I just didn't see how he could think he was going to win. There was a lot of great guys in the contest. And I don't know why he did that. I guess just to draw attention to himself. But then after that, it just soured the whole thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. He had the great upper body, but the legs were a little weak, right?
Yeah. He was extremely, unbelievably strong. He could handle tremendous poundage in the gym, you know.
Right.
Eventually, after he ended up in a lawsuit with Weider and they settled out of court, he never competed again. Had he continued to compete, I'm sure he would have gotten a lot better.
Yeah, that 78 Olympia, that was his last IFBB contest. He never competed in IFBB again after that,
Well, no, you're right. I think he competed in a WABA contest.
Right, against Sergio.
Later.
Right. Chris Dickerson. Tell me about Chris Dickerson, because you guys go way back also with Chris, way back to the AU days.
I personally met Chris Dickerson, geez, this is way back, 1966, when I won a Teenage Mr. America.
Wow.
And that's the first night I met Chris. I mean, you know, he was just getting started. He was older than me.
Yeah.
But he was just getting started in bodybuilding. That's the first time I met him. I remember meeting him with I was always very good friends with Dennis Tenorino. Dennis and I actually met in 1965 at the teenage. Dennis won in 65.
Okay.
And we've always were good friends. And that's when I met him, and also Joe Abinda, who was, former Mr. America, Mr. Universe. All great people from that era. Now, Chris was, it's hard to put into perspective. I guess Chris looked the best standing relaxed. But if he posed, he didn't change really that much. Now, for whatever reason, in my physique, I always hated the way I looked, standing relaxed. It was just like nothing was happening there. But the difference is, when I posed, everything, it kind of exploded.
Yeah.
I guess a better example I could use would be the same way with Casey Viator. When he posed, muscles just like blew up, you know. But Chris, you know, he looked overall, he was always good. And he was always a polished poser as well.
Yeah.
I understand, you know, he's not in good health now. Unfortunately, he's in Florida.
Yeah.
He's in a nursing home now. I think he just turned 81 last week, if I'm not mistaken.
81, yeah, the 25th. Yeah, you're right. Wow, I didn't know you guys went all the way back from when you were a teenager and then
just getting started. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. How about you, Roy? You remember competing with Chris, obviously?
I will shut up because I didn't know that Boris' history is so rich, man.
Yeah.
No, man. This guy, man, what he said about Chris is absolutely there. He's a statue.
Yeah.
You can't beat it, but don't move, because the moment he moved, you didn't see it. This is not saying anything negative. This is fact.
Yeah.
You gave me goose pimples when you told me that he's not doing well and he's in a nursing home. I don't like to hear anything happen to old school body.
Yeah.
Point. I want to know, when the hell is Boyer Cole going to start looking old? This is bullshit. We are not supposed to look like this. We are supposed to walk into the cane and then we should age. When the hell is he going to start looking old? This is if people realize that what we did at the time contributes to what happens in our later life, then you don't know what else to say. Look at you, John. Come on, man. What is before you? Take what is before you and go with it. Don't go looking elsewhere. It's not elsewhere. It's right here.
Yeah.
Do it. Listen and do it. But we don't have to have bodies who are 40 walking with a limp. Come on, man. Walking up and down and can't hold their urine. We don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said previously, I didn't get it. We lost by you. But I think we have to find a name, a different name for our sport as it is today. You have to find another name. Construction, I don't know. But bodybuilding is health.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about health.
Yeah. Well, if you remember guys like, you know, Jack LaLanne, look how, you know, Jack was in his 90s and he always preached the health aspect of bodybuilding. So that's really what the whole sport was originally intended for, was, you know, to build a healthier body, right?
Yep. And this is what I didn't realize, that being strong and or fit and or younger and or functioning younger is really all there is to it. You can be successful all your life. You're a big executive. You have a lot of money. You don't work for real with anything, but you can't walk.
Yeah.
This is it. So then eat it up, man. And I'm happy that I've learned what I learned. And I'm happy that I can be a picture and model of what I'm trying to not sell. Cheer.
Yeah.
You should be a perfect example for that when I'm gone. Like, Boy is not going to be.
Roy. I say every day, Roy, when I wake up, I stand up, it's a good day. About anything. You know what? And Roy mentioned something exactly right. And I think Roy will agree with me on this. Ronnie Coleman, when he was competing, I think we would probably have to say, of all the Mr. Olympias, at his best, he was by far the best.
Yeah.
He carried so much muscle. But look at him now. I mean, I had lunch on this past Wednesday with Sean Ray, and we were discussing, because that was in his era. And he says, I mean, he's in a wheelchair now. I don't even think he can walk anymore. He's had 11 back surgeries.
Yeah.
It just breaks my heart to see a guy who was so tremendous, and then now he can't even function as a normal human being.
I know.
That's really sad.
Yeah, and he loved training so much too. It's sad that he can't even train, or he can't train like he wants to, you know.
But you would think, I mean, from what I've read, he keeps breaking the screws.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, hey, you do it once, you hate this sort of taste stuff. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Right.
Find another hobby.
Right. It's funny because when I used to watch his videos and he used to do all these heavy weights, I used to think, God, is this guy's spine made of titanium steel? How can he do this? You know, deadlifting 800 pounds and he's doing bent over rows with 500 pounds. I couldn't believe he could. And then eventually it did give out. You know, it took a while, but eventually it gave out.
Yeah, that's what's so sad. I mean, it's and you really develop an outstanding physique, you don't really have to go that extreme at the weights.
Right.
You have to be smart about it.
Right. Hey, Boyer, were you surprised when Franco passed away last year?
I was.
Yeah.
I really was. I never knew Franco well, never had much of contact with him, but I assumed he was always in good health, and he had downsized as he's gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
But I was shocked to find out that he passed away. He really was.
Yeah, I was too. I thought he was going to be one of those guys that lived to be 100, you know.
Boyer.
Yeah. You know, you had mentioned something about Jack Chalane. I got to know, I was fortunate, I got to know Jack quite well because I did a lot of promotions for Jack Chalane health clubs back in the day. And Jack and I used to do appearances together all the time. And And I remember him telling me, he says, you know, you bodybuilders, you guys, y'all going to ruin the sport, you know, taking steroids and all. And then we would go on and on. He would get on his soapbox and talk about that. So finally, I asked him one day, I said, Jack, I said, back in your day, I said, did you ever try anything? Did you, any thought of it? He says, well, he says, yeah. He says, you know, he says, after our workouts, we used to go down to the slaughterhouse and we would drink blood. We'd drink a pint of blood and believing that that would give you extra amino acids.
Wow.
I said, well, Jack, did it work? He said, well, I had to quit. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, he says, I was drinking one day and he said, I swallowed something. I said, well, what was it? He said, well, I realized it was a blood clot. He says, after that, I couldn't do it anymore. So I said, well, Jack, that ought to tell you. So people will try anything. Every athlete, regardless of what kind of sport, you're naturally going to look for an edge. And that's what they thought was their edge back in those days.
Right.
He was quite a character. I remember him telling me, he says, you know, I could never die. He says, it'd be bad for my publicity. He says, I got to live forever. I think he lived till he was 96.
I know. 96. Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, he was awesome. Hey, Roy, were you surprised when Franco passed away? How well did you know him when you guys were competing?
I'm here dying of laughter. You can't talk to me now, man. I don't. Boris' history is so thick and rich. it's incredible. That's it. Anyway, I didn't know that was Franco passed. It gave me goosebumps, actually, because I knew him. But they told me that he had drowned. I don't know why he passed. When he drowned, that's what was supposed to happen. I thought he had died of some illness or something.
I think it was his heart. I think he had a heart attack. I think that's what it was.
Okay. And they said I didn't know anything about it, but I was sad. To hear his passing.
Yeah.
I am here. My wife is cracking up because then Boris says things, and I laugh. As you see, I was telling you about. Because I don't think my history, man, and what I can share pales in comparison to what Boris would say and teach. It's tremendous. And on top of that, I'll say it again, I don't know what youth Billy's taking. Bottle it? Something behind, man.
Hey, Roy, didn't you just win a trainer of the year or something, or in Canada? You won a big award, right, about a year ago?
Yeah. Nominated me as the greatest Canadian bodybuilder of all time.
Of all time. Wow. That's great.
But it was okay. It's flattering. I take this all and because of people like Boyer, because of people like Boyer and all the people that I look up to that make you push yourself harder.
Mm-hmm.
Then people see you doing it and they join and it rubs off.
Yeah.
I really picture that as something that would bring bodybuilding, especially when they won the World Championship. Because Canada is right next to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm surprised how intimidated Canadians were at that time. I don't know if they still are, by Americans, and in particular American bodybuilders.
Oh, really? Okay.
I never heard that they went to Night of the Champions. And I placed third. And then they heard, and I was fourth to Boyer Cole. No way. Roy Callender cannot be Boyer Cole. He has no calves. But that's not a thing they said about me here. But that thing got me so much guest posing appearances. And that's how Canada is. That's how Canada has changed. And by the way, I want to extend all my sympathies and my best wishes to all you guys in the States because of what you're going through right now. And I hope you'll be able to, because we can lead the world, not we, you can lead the world in what you do.
Yeah. How is the COVID out there in Canada, Roy? Is it not that bad?
Not that bad at all. Here in Quebec, we have the highest cases, but our population is minuscule compared to what the United States
is. Yeah.
So working it nicely. And this is why my business studio is functioning so well. Because all this thing about social distancing, cleaning your hands, we were doing that before.
Mm, okay.
I was able to, right now, this is why I was so late getting to you, man. Spend so much time with clients, one-on-one. Everything is one-on-one. I just did a session today with six individuals, just six. They had their distance. They're not giggly. They're all business people. They come in, do their thing. They don't even use the shower. They're so happy to be there, they leave. Yeah. And then I continued my personal training, one-on-one, my wife and I. One time at a time, 2,200 feet, four people.
Yeah.
Cannot go wrong.
Okay. Hey, Boyer, are you still in touch with Bill Pearl on a regular basis? Because I know you guys have always been close.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm trying to think. I talked to him several times a year. It's probably been 3 or 4 months since the last time I spoke to him.
Okay.
He seems to be doing well. You know he's going to turn 90.
I know.
October 31st. Right. Incredible.
It's incredible. What? I know.
Yeah.
That's me.
And he's got a brother, Harold Pearl, who I think is, I want to say Harold is either 92 or 93. Now, Harold, as big as Bill Pearl was, had his brother been serious about bodybuilding, he would have been greater than Bill Pearl.
Hmm.
He had a frame so massive. This is another funny story about Harold. Harold was so big, he took a ring off his finger one time, and he could pass a quarter through the ring. That's how big his hands were.
Wow.
Massive, massive hands.
Wow.
Unfortunately, he also had a very bad temper, and that resulted in him getting in a lot of trouble at times. But you know, a nice guy. I haven't seen him in many, many years, but I understand he's still very much alive.
Wow, that's amazing. I had I promoted a show in Chicago, and I gave Bill an award, and I brought him in. And I think this was 2011, so he was in his 80s. And I remember standing next to him, and he dwarfed me. You know, I mean, even at 80 years old, like over 80 years old, he had the big shoulders and the big hands, and just a big bone structure.
Yeah, he just had an enormous frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had to be huge when he competed back in the 50s and 60s. I mean, he had to dwarf everybody, right?
I would guess he probably weighed, well, when he won, the last time he won the NABBA Universe, I think he was around 240 pounds.
Yeah.
But his frame was just so big, you know. It's hard to judge how much he weighed. Everybody today is worried about weighing over 300 pounds, you know, but it's how you look on stage. Nobody's going to judge you on how much you weigh on the skin. It's all basically an illusion. It's how you look on stage.
Yeah, yeah, right. Speaking of illusion, I want to talk a little bit about posing because, since I've talked to both of you guys, unfortunately, we've had a lot of great bodybuilders pass away, like Franco and then Mike Metzger, of course. Well, he passed away a while ago, but we also lost Ed Corney a couple of years ago. And Ed was the guy that really led the way as far as posing. And Boyer, I remember you were always a great poser. And Roy, you were also a great poser also. I remember seeing you guys at the Olympia when I was a kid. How long did you work on your posing? What was the key to getting good posing? Because, like, when I see the bodybuilders today, I'm sure as you will agree, the bodybuilders today just don't look like they put any time into their posing routines at all.
Well, I can say this. The very first time I had the opportunity to see Ed Corney pose, I decided, okay, this is where it's at. I got to get to work on my pose. And this guy was light years ahead of everybody. It was just beautiful to watch him pose.
Yeah.
So in preparing for a contest, I normally spent, I know this is going to sound, I spent about an hour and a half every day posing, practicing posing.
Every day.
Posing and stuff like that. But the biggest criticism today that I have opposing, besides people not putting any time on a presentation, is the way they pose. I mean, they have no facial control. I mean, they all look like they're constipated when they're up on stage. You know, it's not a good look, you know?
Right.
You can get a pose, control all the muscles, and still have a nice, pleasant look, a smile on your face. Guys don't do that anymore.
Right.
I mean, it just seems, I probably have no right in saying this, but I mean, just observing, they look like they just kind of waddle from one end of the stage to the other. And the thing that always amazed me, you go out and these guys go out and start posing, and they put their like, are you going to clap for me? If you're good, the audience is going to respond. Why do that? It looks so ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
What do you think about it, Roy?
I'm 100% in agreement. I only really appreciated posing since I saw Ed Corney as well. Because Jimmy Caruso, who was my coach at the time, is a photographer. You know him very well. This guy made me spend time in front of the mirror and pose. He said, I don't care what physique you have. If you don't present it, you mean nothing. And we would meet before because I didn't know any better. If you're ignorant, you don't know any better. We fought, and he pushed me, and then he would show me, listen, we're going to make a good package. You can make this package, and you're going to take it on stage, and you're going to show what? You have to go and present it. When you pose, people should get goose pimples. And I thought he was talking bullshit. But when I went out, like Boris said, people hold their hands. When I went out and I posed, people at that time appreciated the presentation that the 220-pound guy can give. He looked balanced. He looked like a ballerina. He can stand on one leg. He can still show. Oh, man. This is why there was a category called best poser.
Yeah.
But it should never have faded. Because presentation, like in anything else,
is
of our sport. We have to present something. It's no longer that way anymore. You don't have to present anything. You just have to walk up there with your bubble gut and put your hands up. And you're like Boris said. But we didn't have to ask people to cheer for us. They cheered.
Yeah.
You hit a pose that they loved it. You flow from one pose to the other. Oh, they let you know you are doing the job. And the more they cheered, the more creative you got for the next time.
Yeah, right.
And then Boris said he would spend an hour and a half a day. Jimmy made me stand about that. And I hated it. You understand? I hated it. But then I saw myself getting more muscular and more muscular as a result of posing.
Yeah.
Yes. I think we should pose more, but I don't think the guys have much to pose with and or for. They get put too much stress in their heart. But,
well, you know, another thing about both of you guys, or a lot of bodybuilders from your era, was you guys had poses that were unique to your physiques. And, yep. You know, I'm sure you remember, like, back in the late 70s when Arnold and Lorimer had the Olympia, they would start out where you came out and you could only see the silhouettes, and you would hit your signature pose, and the whole crowd would go crazy because they would all recognize which pose, you know, would belong to each bodybuilder. And that doesn't happen at all today. These guys, I don't think any of these guys have signature poses anymore.
You remember that, eh?
Yeah.
Was what it's about. That was a big part of the show.
Yeah.
Warrior had his, and he had mine. You could be able to tell Zane had his. You can tell from the silhouette. That was something. I wonder if they can do that today.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you even had Lee Haney said he borrowed one of your poses, right? Right? He said he was going to steal one of your poses. The one like this, the back pose.
You want to talk about a flattering moment? You want to talk about something? He can say that to me about me. Listen, that pose became known as the calendar pose. Jimmy was teaching me how to do a twisted back single bicep. And I fell. Hold it. That's a pose. I said, come on, Jimmy, that's not a pose. Can you hold it? Ben got his camera, took a picture of it, came back and showed it to me and said, you have to work on this. Yep. And the challenge, the pose was born. That's how the like I told you. Like Boy just said, posing, and I thought I knew it all.
Yeah.
God, I think I know more than this guy. Right. Wrong. He was right. When you can pose and you get on stage with a physique, even if you're not in your best shape, you know this, John. You get on stage even though you're not in your best shape, you can still present to the audience something that blows their mind.
Yeah.
You know, because of the presentation.
Right. Tom. Is Jimmy still around, Roy? Jimmy Caruso?
Yeah, he is. And I talk about him every day.
Really?
Boy, I must have met him already because he was the photographer. He was Ben's George photographer.
Yeah.
I think he sent Arnold up to Montreal once just to be posed by Jimmy. And they worked on that thing 2 days. And the pictures looked great, but they were taken in the dump, in the hellhole, the back of the gym. But those pictures still around today. I have some of them.
Yeah, oh, he was a classic photographer. Some of his poses, or some of his photos were just classics, yeah.
Pain in the ass, like, you know, my thing. I mean, in a nice way.
Yeah. How old is he now, Roy? Is he in his, he's in his 90s, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Great guy. I hope he lives his senior years in peace and comfort, and when he passes, he just passes.
Yeah. Well, before I let you guys go, I want to ask you one more question. Speaking of Ed Corney, I read an article by him in an old muscle builder, and he was talking about how every bodybuilder in their career has that one pivotal contest that lets them believe, or that was the contest that made them believe they could be a great bodybuilder. It was the one that really, you know, launched them into superstardom. So it doesn't have to be a professional contest. It could probably be an amateur contest. Or it's the one that meant the most to them. Which one do you think was that contest for you guys? The one contest that let you believe you were going to be really great?
Night of the Champions one.
The Night of the Champions? Okay.
Night of the Champions one, yeah.
Okay, the very first one. That was your first pro show, right, Roy? Okay. Yeah. How about you, Boyer?
Well, my story is a little different because the first contest I ever won was a Mr. New Orleans contest.
Okay.
When I was 17.
Wow.
And that was also the largest audience I had ever posed for, ever, in all my career, because it was held outdoors at Lake Pontchartrain. So that was the night the amusement park opened up. So the audience was 10,000 people. So that was very large in those days.
10,000 people. Wow.
10,000 people. And I actually won that contest 4 days before I graduated from high school. So that was the thing that just blew my mind. I'm thinking, maybe I can actually do something in this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that spurred me to say, okay, what's my next step? Because it's kind of just like when I won the Mr. America, I remember Mark Mincer asked us, how did you really feel? Did you draw it all in? You win the Mr. America? I said, no, because I remember sitting backstage getting dressed and I'm thinking, okay, now I won the Mr. America. What do I have to do to get to the next level? So I was already thinking about the universe. But that first contest, the Mr. New Orleans contest, is the one that said, maybe I actually have a future in this.
Wow.
That is amazing, man.
Yeah, that is amazing. 17 years old, that's crazy. That was an outdoor arena too, right?
It was outdoor arena, yeah. It was on a huge stage. They had high wire acts and circus acts, but it was all lit and everything was done outstage on a huge stage.
Huh, wow. That kind of reminds me of like Ed Jubenville. Remember how I used to have those shows?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Holyoke, Massachusetts, yeah.
Right.
How long did they do that for? Did they? I'm sure it's not going on anymore, right?
Well, actually, the Mr. New Orleans contest was older than even the Mr. America contest. I think the first Mr. America was in 1939.
39, right.
And I remember meeting a guy that had actually won the Mr. New Orleans contest, and he had won it in 1932. So it was even prior to the Mr. America contest.
Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy.
At that time, that was the contest to win in the South. Everybody came to New Orleans for that particular contest.
How many guys are in that show?
It was never a whole lot. Probably about 25 that night.
Okay. Still, a win at 17 years old, that's incredible.
Oh, I thought I'd really done something, believe me.
All right, guys. Well, I'll let you guys go. I know it was hard to get everybody together, but I'm glad we were able to do it. This was a real joy for me to talk to two of the legends of the sport. Of course, I grew up admiring both of you guys, so it was great to get you guys together. And it's been a while since you guys have seen each other, too, right?
Oh, it was an unbelievable pleasure just being able to visit and have a chance to talk to Roy. I can't even remember the last time I talked. I remember the first time, but I don't remember the last time.
When do you remember the last time, Roy? I can't remember either.
It was great seeing you, Roy.
Same here and more, man. Same here. Back at you 300 times. You can't believe how – look at my skin. I got goosebumps seeing you, man. I don't have a cold. Boy, really, really, but I still want to ask this question another time. When are you going to start looking old, man? Shit.
Hey, I'm 74. How old do you have to be?
Yeah, both you guys look fantastic.
You're the same age, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you again for joining me, and maybe we can do this again sometime. We were supposed to have Danny Padilla with us, but unfortunately he didn't make it, so I'd love to, get you guys back on the show again. It's always great to visit with you guys, and I'm glad both of you guys are doing well. And it's been a while since I talked to either one of you guys either, so it's great that we got the chance to talk again.
Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. God bless you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Okay, brother.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you again to Boyer Coe and Roy Callender for coming on the show. I know it was hard to get everybody's schedules coordinated, but I'm glad we worked it out. I also want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I want to thank all our Patreon donors, all you guys who are contributing money each month to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast to help incur our expenses. I really appreciate you guys. If anyone out there is interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is the official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have a little link called Patreon, and you can just click on that and contribute as little or as much as you want every month. I appreciate you guys even considering that. Be sure to check out my YouTube channel under my name, John Hansen, and if you guys could subscribe to that, I've got all my Bodybuilding Legends podcast shows are now on YouTube as well, so I add a lot of pictures and videos, and I'm also putting up new episodes of my bodybuilding history series on there every week. So you guys will love that. And if you listen to our show on Apple Podcasts, be sure to go on there and rate the show and leave a review, please. I would really appreciate that. All right, guys, that's it. We will be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Keep training hard. Keep safe out there. And we'll see you next week. Take care.